Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster and Hardwood Paroxysm. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. And today we're back at another of the season preview podcasts. And today we're going to be touching on a team that has all manner of question marks heading into the season. And that is, of course, the Los Angeles Lakers. And I am not alone in this one. I am joined by Kaveh Jam, a writer from Hardwood Paroxysm and Hoops Habit. Kaveh, how are you going?
Good. Thanks for having me, Josh. How are you?
No, I'm good. It's good to have you on. And we've got to get straight into the Lakers because there's a lot to talk about. Before we do that, just let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at Kaveh's Room. That's my first name in Room, Kaveh Sroom.
So head across and follow Kaveh on Twitter and get in all sorts of conversations and ask him any questions after we have this show. And if you are watching live, of course, you can ask us questions as we go through this. Now, with the Lakers, we know about the Lakers' mystique and the Lakers' allure and their storied past, but they've been a mess the last couple of seasons. They made a lot of changes this season. There's going to be more changes coming. Are they a team that you think got better this offseason? Are they treading water? Are they waiting for a few years to get better? Or how do you see them this year? Are they improving their record? What's their offseason been like to you?
I have like mixed feelings on the Lakers. I think that we can all agree they got better. It's hard to not get better based off of the kind of season they had last year. But I feel like they're stuck in this gray area, this mediocrity where it's kind of like a death knell in the NBA. You have to like either be really, really bad and rebuild from the ground up, or you got to be at the upper echelon and competing. When you're kind of stuck in the middle where the Lakers are, it's really, really hard to progress and move forward. And I think that's exactly where they're stuck at. I also think that they're a little bit too tied up upon living kind of in the past and their name and their brand. I think that's kind of an issue with them as well. They do have some young pieces that they picked up via the draft. I like some of the additions they made in free agency. But obviously they're just so far from where we're used to seeing them.
Yeah, exactly. They're not the Lakers of old. They don't look like they're going to be that for a few years, but at least they did make some positive moves. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to be massively better. They're no shot for the playoffs this season unless a lot of things go right or a lot of things go wrong for other teams. But there's a lot changing on this team, and we talk about things changing and guys that arrived in this team, not including the rookies because we're going to talk about them a little bit later, but they added Brandon Bass, Lou Williams, and Roy Hibbert, and all of those guys are going to have a substantial impact this season. Who do you think was the best signing or best acquisition out of those three guys?
I'm a huge Brandon Bass fan. I think they got him at a bargain. I think he's solid. He's very consistent. Obviously, he's not a franchise changer. But at this point, after they got pretty much rejected from all of their top choices, I mean, Brandon Bass, you can't really complain at the salary figure they got him, which I think it was like $6 million 2 years, something like that. And I like Lou Williams. I think what they decide to do with him, whether they bring him off the bench, which I think they should do. I think he's going to be an instant spark off the bench. I like him. I like some of the other things they did too. I think the Lou Williams addition though is going to give them a boost on offense. There's questions on defense still, so we'll see what they do to rectify that, but.
We'll talk Lou Williams first because he's the reigning sixth man of the year in the NBA. He comes across into a crowded backcourt, which we are going to talk more in depth on later. But Williams is a guy that I think is going to be an underrated player for fantasy leagues this year. He was very good last season. He had a lot of value. He shot the ball quite well, from three especially. Scored a lot of points, and it's a team that needs that backup guy someone off the bench you can actually create. Because let's start now. How do you see their starting lineup looking opening night?
So that's another thing. I'm not sure what Byron Scott is thinking. So I think their best lineup, potentially could be, obviously you start Russell at point guard, then you go, Clarkson at shooting guard and Kobe at the small forward, which I kind of have questions there. Are they going to go with that three guard starting lineup, move Kobe to the small forward? Are they going to bring Clarkson off the bench? How is that going to work? I'm not sure, but I think you can start with that kind of experiment and see how that works on opening night. And then power forward is the big question for me, because I'm not sure. Are you going to start Bass? Are you going to start Julius Randle? Randle does not look ready at this point. His summer league kind of was underwhelming. The way I saw it, I don't think he's ready to start right off the bat. I think you go Bass, starting lineup, and then center, obviously you have Hibbert. Usually you go into your, training camp, kind of have a feel about what the starting lineup is going to be. There's just so many questions with this team, and I think summer league just kind of added to those questions. So, but I would go Russell, Clarkson, Kobe, Bass, Hibbert, experiment with that, and then see how that works, and then you could always kind of like play around with that.
I think that's pretty much that's exactly the starting lineup that I would go for. Kobe at the three is not going to be great defensively, but they don't really have any other option to play the three unless they're going to go with Ryan Kelly there, and his defense is probably worse than what Kobe's would be. There's no other option. The other option they have at small forward is Anthony Brown, a second round rookie, or Nick Young, and again, they're not options that are good. So I think they're probably best putting Kobe at the three at this point. But it is going to be an interesting situation of how they run that backcourt, because there's five guys that could play minutes across the one and two and three position and play 30-plus minutes a night with Bryant, Clarkson, Russell, Williams, and Young. All those guys. Young probably doesn't deserve 30 minutes a night, but he's going to get over 20 minutes a night. There's going to be a lot of guys there to get minutes. But Williams he's sort of similar to Isaiah Thomas in that he doesn't need 30 plus minutes to have a real impact. He could be the second leading scorer on this team. He can still hit two threes a game, get you a steal, shoot a good free throw percentage, and I think he's going to be quite underrated from fantasy guys coming into the season, because you see that his minutes are going to be limited. But for where he's being drafted, which is like the last round pretty much, I think you're going to get significant value back on him. Now, Roy Hibbert's an interesting guy. He's the butt of a lot of people's jokes. From the way that he has performed, you hear a 7'2" guy that can't get rebounds and can't shoot and has a poor field goal percentage and all that, I understand. But I think he comes into I think it's good for him to be in a different situation. It's a refreshing change for him. We know he's had issues with his mental frame of mind. He comes across now to Los Angeles. I had a question come in here on the Basketball Monster forums from Bechtel J, and he says, is this going to be the best season for Hibbert, or is Kobe going to send him to the corner for a timeout? So is Kobe going to affect Hibbert, or do you think Hibbert has a bounce back type of season?
I think Hibbert's issue is mental. You can't really argue with his physical tools. The guy's 7'2". We're talking about a former all-star here. I think like he's proven himself before. He just needs to do it again. I kind of think this might be the last hurrah for Hibbert. I think he has every reason and motivation to have, I'm not sure a career year, but definitely a bounce back year, because he has an expiring deal. He's at that age where he would like another relatively sizable contract, and he's not going to get that further on down the line. This is kind of his last kind of hurrah. I think he has. I think he's going to have a bounce back here. I don't think he's going to be an all-star by any means, but I think you could expect 12, 13, and maybe, double-digit rebounds from the guy, depending on if he's able to stay out of foul trouble, which is a question with him always, and more of kind of like the mental issues with him. If he can stay engaged and kind of not let Kobe kind of get under his skin, but motivate him and kind of have that year where we've seen him, accustomed to having before with Indiana.
The thing with Hibbert is that he hasn't been able to play big minutes, for whatever reason, for coaching reasons. He hasn't played over 30 minutes ever in his career. I think he's in a situation in LA where he can play 30 minutes, because the quality of the guys behind him is limited. Tariq Black and Robert Sacre, Robert Sacre is close to probably the worst player in the NBA at the moment. Tariq Black he was serviceable, but he's not a starting caliber player. So I think that they would want to be giving Hibbert 30 minutes a night. And considering he's their only real plus defender on this team, they're going to need him out there. They're going to need someone who can actually protect the paint and protect the rim. because there's going to be a lot being, you know, sent into him, because the perimeter defense is not going to be fantastic with Russell, Bryant, and Clarkson out there. They're not, Bass is not a good defender. Randall's not a good defender. There's basically one good defender, and it's Hibbert. So he's going to need to stay out there as much as possible. So there's a chance that he ends up with a season where he gets two blocks. You know, he's not going to get many rebounds because that's just not what he's like. He's more of a box out guy to allow Brandon Bass to come in, but 7 to 8 rebounds is not crazy, and he's a good free throw shooter as well, so he's fundamentally sound in that sense, and that helps his value in fantasy leagues as well. So he's someone who I think is going to be a very good pickup for this team.
If you think about it, he's not that much, he's very similar to Andrew Bynum, if you remember their games. They're both borderline all-stars, both long guys who protect the rim, but at the same time, they have their issues. They can break down. They're not mentally, you know, there's question marks on the mental aspect of the game, but they're very similar.
Yep. That's true. Now, the guys that they lost in the offseason, there's quite a few of them. Jeremy Lin has gone to Charlotte. Carlos Boozer is still floating around in NBA purgatory. Ed Davis across to Portland. Wayne Ellington is, I think he's floating around in New York somewhere. Ronnie Price has gone to Phoenix, and Jordan Hill in Indiana. Are any of these guys a considerable loss, or who do you think is the biggest loss out of that group of guys?
Honestly, I don't think any of them are big losses. I didn't see any of them coming back. I think the only player the Lakers really wanted to bring back was Ed Davis, and I think Davis declined his option and took more money with Portland. But the other people, the other players, I don't think it's a big loss. I actually think they improved with the players that they did got versus the players that they lost.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. So you're saying that you weren't a fan of Ronnie Price being a starting point guard for an NBA team?
I think that's fair to say.
That was one of the more baffling decisions of any coach from the season, to run Ronnie Price out there for such an extended period of time as a starter when there were other capable guys. Jordan Clarkson was on the roster. Jeremy Lin was there, and Lin's not a fantastic player. Clarkson, we saw, had a great second half, but Ronnie Price is basically a negative in every category of the game. But Warren Scott thought that was within his best interest to run him out there as much as possible. But you're right, Ed Davis. I think Ed Davis would have been willing to look at re-signing with the Lakers in terms of getting – he was on a minimum contract, so he wanted a bigger contract. But I don't think he liked the way that he was treated down the stretch when they were rotating big men and just sitting guys out like him would sit – he'd sit out for 5 or 6 games at a time, and Boozer would sit, and then Hill would sit, and then they'd give minutes to Ryan Kelly and Robert Sacre and Tariq Black, and – he was very outspoken that not being happy with the way that Byron Scott was running it, which made no sense for a guy that you could have brought back and could have had somewhat of a future as a decent big man. The rest of those guys, they're garbage, but Davis has a lot. I think he has a lot to offer, and I think he was misused in LA, like he was misused in Memphis, and he does have the ability, I think, to be a backup big man or even a starting big man on maybe not a great team. The exciting thing about this team is the amount of young players that are on this roster at the moment. So we're going to look at the draft choices from the last couple of seasons, and there's a lot of guys to get to. So I'll go through a couple of guys who aren't really all that relevant, like Michael Frazier and Jonathan Holmes have signed. They may not make the final roster. They are undrafted guys. Frazier is a shooting guard from Florida. Apparently he's been impressive. It's another guard, so I don't really see much happening from him. Larry Nance was a summer league standout. I think he was a fan favorite of the Lakers, but there's not really much room for him in the rotation either. What do you see from Nance moving forward?
I have question marks about Lance. He showed flashes in summer league. I wasn't too excited about taking him in the first round, considering who was still on the board. It's funny because when they came back around in the second round, I think when they took Anthony Brown, I think Nance would have still been on the board. If they really wanted Nance, they could have took him in the second round. I think Montrezl Harrell was still on the board. I think there were a lot of better options. Kevon Looney. I'm still trying to figure out how he fell to 30, but I'm not sure. This season, I wouldn't expect too much from Nance. He looks to have some athleticism, which is something that the Lakers could use down the line, but I wouldn't expect too much out of him this year or next year.
Yeah, no, he's a guy down the track, but he showed a stack of athleticism, some nice defensive moves, some good, he was dunks and alley-oops, but I don't think he's ever going to develop into a real top quality starting power forward in the league or anything like that. But a guy that I do like is Anthony Brown, who we've mentioned already. He was a really good three-point shooter at Stanford. He hit over 40% of his threes. The Lakers don't have a knockdown shooter. Like Lou Williams pretty much is. But in terms of those wing guys, they don't have someone there. Nick Young, we know about his restrictions and his limitations. But that without a true small forward on the team, Anthony Brown, there could be a situation if Kobe goes down, Brown could find himself in a role at the end of the season where he's getting 25 minutes a game and he's hitting 1.5 to 2 threes and just being an all-round solid guy. He struggled a bit in summer league, as most guys, as most rookies do, but I really like Anthony Brown's fit on this team, and I think that he was a pretty decent pick in that second round. What have you liked from Brown or haven't liked, or do you see that there is that opportunity for him?
I like Brown a lot. I think the most useful thing about Brown is he's 6'8", so yep. He's kind of a stretch guy. So if need be, he can go inside, he can step outside. You have to honor his three. But I think that the better shooter down the line might be Michael Frazier. I followed this guy pretty closely at Florida, and this guy was lights out. If anyone has followed Frazier at Florida or watched him in the tournament, I think he's a knockdown shooter. I think Brown and Frazier both down the line could be those shooters that the Lakers, can use. I'm not sure how much of an impact they'll have right off the bat, especially Frazier. I think he's way down the depth chart. But Brown, I like his size. Definitely his size, combined that with his shot, is going to be very useful to stretch the floor.
Yeah, you mentioned that guys like Frazier. Look, aside from those five guys I mentioned before, there's also Jabari Brown, who's there, who's probably ahead of him on the depth chart as well. So there's a number of guys, but you're right. He is a guy that fits a role for them. They don't have a player that is like him, a guy who can play as the two and knock down shots. There's guys, the other guys that got the two, like Williams is more of a slasher. He can shoot. Clarkson, not a great 3-point shooter, but Frazier's a completely different guy. So if he develops, he could be a key piece down the track at some point. Now,
against UCLA, where he single-handedly, I think, just took over the game. If you ever have a chance, go take a look at that. That guy is lights up.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to go and watch that. But we talk about draft choices, and there's three guys here that we need to focus on. Three guys who theoretically are going to be the building blocks of a Lakers resurgence: Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson. Now, we've already mentioned that you think that Randle's probably going to come off the bench behind Bass. I'm almost certain that he is. I am not a Julius Randle fan. I was not impressed seeing him in summer league. He did not look athletic. He did not look like he could finish. He just didn't look like he could do enough. And I'm not convinced that he's ever going to be a quality big man in the NBA. I'm probably writing him off early. I just don't see it from him. I think he'll be serviceable, but I don't think he's ever going to be great or all-star level. Are you more excited about Randle, or how do you view him?
I think your concerns are fair. When I first saw him at Kentucky, I figured he could, at best transition into kind of like a Zach Randolph type player.
Yep.
Someone who's not very athletic, which not every effective NBA player has to be athletic, as long as you utilize other things such as, some touch around the rim, agility, which I think Randle's biggest asset as Kentucky was he's very agile. He's able to move in the low post. And, there's not a lot of great low post players that can move like Randle at Kentucky. But what I noticed, especially during summer league, he looks a little bit too heavy. He's not moving well at all. I'm not sure if he's, there's some reports out there that he might have put on some muscle. If he did, it's certainly not helping him. If anything, it's kind of limiting his athleticism. So there's questions there. I'm not like you. I have some questions about how he's gonna, fit with the team and long term. I'm not sure exactly. I do think he needs to lose some weight and get a little bit more light on his feet.
Yeah, his touch around the rim wasn't great, and you're right, he just doesn't, you see him play and you go, he just doesn't look like he just doesn't like have the it factor. Like, there's nothing wowing about him. Like, summer league guys were closing him down and closing lanes off too quickly for my liking with him. And the thing is, he doesn't translate well to the NBA because he can't hit outside shots. He's not a good shooter. He's not a good free throw shooter. He doesn't defend well. He doesn't get defensive stats. He can't get steals. He can't get blocks. He's not a good passer. So what he does is score and rebound. And that's great if you're looking at NBA play from 50 years ago. I think, okay, scoring and rebounding is all that matters. But he doesn't do enough stuff. And to me, that really drags him down. Now, the two guards, Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell. Now, Clarkson was a guy who I was really excited about the Lakers drafted last season. It took 4 months for Byron Scott to realize that he was actually a decent player. And then when he got going and played down the stretch, he was fantastic. He was playing big minutes, putting up huge numbers. But this season, I think we're going to see a regression, not a regression from him in terms of his play, but in terms of a regression in his stats, because he's not going to be getting 38 minutes a night. He's not going to be playing every game with the ball in his hands at all times. So I think that I was super impressed with him, and I think that he is definitely a future starter in the NBA for quite a while. But I think we're going to see a drop down in his numbers this season. I think it's going to be even hard for him to get 30 minutes a night this season, to be honest, with all these other guys. How do you view Clarkson as a Lakers player for the future? Do you think that he's going to take another step this year? Because a lot of people are saying that he's looking for a breakout, but I maintain that he had his breakout last season and he's going to take a step back this year.
I absolutely agree. I'm actually a big Clarkson guy. So let me throw that out there before I offer just a little bit of criticism. And that is, this is a guy that had an amazing second half of the year on a team that was largely irrelevant and out of contention. So I think we're being oversold just a little bit. That's not to say that this guy doesn't have talent or he's not a, you know, potential rotation player. I absolutely think he is. I would like to see him get meaningful minutes, which, you know, he's on the Lakers, so I don't know how much meaningful time he's going to get. But with the influx of all these guards now that they have, they're suddenly kind of stocked at the guard position, if you think about it. And with the focus being on Russell and the shadow of Kobe Bryant kind of looming his final year, it's almost like Clarkson's going to be kind of an afterthought almost. The first thing that's going to come to your mind is Russell, Kobe's last year, you know, maybe Hibbert. You're not going to think about Clarkson as much as you did last season, where basically he had the keys. So I think he's going to take a step back from a fantasy perspective and just his stats. I don't think he's going to match the second half of last year.
I think he's absolutely going to take a step back. And a lot of people are saying, yeah, we're looking at Clarkson inside the top sort of 60 players, but it's just, and that's great if he was doing what he did last season, but he's just not. He's not going to have the ball in his hands this much. I don't think he's going to be able to get 30 minutes a night, basically, because you can't give everyone 30 minutes a night. You can't give him 30 minutes, Russell 30 minutes, Kobe 30 minutes, Williams 25 minutes, Nick Young 25 minutes. You give minutes into Anthony Brown, Michael Frazier, Jabari Brown. There's just too many guys. Now, all those last three guys I mentioned are obviously much lower on the list, but Russell's got to have plenty of minutes. Kobe's going to have plenty of minutes. Now, if Kobe gets injured, it's a different story, because then it opens up significantly, and then we'll see more second half Jordan Clarkson. But I think he's going to take a step back, and I think that what we saw in the second half of last season is more what we're going to be able to expect from him in 2016-17, when, assuming Kobe Bryant retires and Russell's had a season there and they work together. But Clarkson looked dominant in summer league, and that's great, but I don't think that it's going to translate to a great fantasy season this year. And the thing is, he doesn't hit many threes. He doesn't get many steals. He's a points, rebounds, assists sort of guy, a good free throw shooter, but he's not getting those little things where a guy that, a guy like Isaiah Cannon in Philadelphia, who plays 20 minutes and he won't play as well as Clarkson, but he comes out and he hits two and a half threes a game, whereas Clarkson doesn't have that ability to just go in for little short stretches and knock down some shots, and that drops him down as well. D'Angelo Russell. Okay, we hear lots of wild, conflicting thoughts on him, the future, a bust, and it's way too early to say all of these things, but I will say this, and I've said it before, he was underwhelming at summer league. He looked slow. He could only go one direction. He couldn't elevate to get to the rim. Everybody seemed to know what he was doing. Couldn't blow past anybody. His passing looked great. His shooting looked bad. His ability to drive looked bad. The turnovers, I don't care that he had 8 a game. That doesn't matter, but overall, his play was not encouraging of a guy that it was the number 2 overall pick. Did you see more from him than that, or are you concerned?
I had questions about Russell with the number 2 pick. I mean, summer league just kind of added to those questions for me. I don't see, like, if you look at a lot of the good shooters in the NBA, one of the great things that they do, obviously they're able to actually make shots, but the reason they're able to make these shots is their footwork. They're able to get separation on players. They're able to, you know, get lift off. I don't think Russell is there yet with his skills. We got to remember the guy was just, you know, a freshman at Ohio State. he has a long way to go, but at Summer League, he's not doing kind of some of the fundamentals of getting that separation. You know, when he is open, he's able to hit his shots, but I think he shot 37% Summer League to like only hit 2 threes, something like that.
He's 11% from three.
Yeah, I mean, it was just really, really bad. And then it kind of like compounds the issue when you look at Okafor, and he's, you know, doing fairly well in Summer League with Philadelphia, looks way more polished, looks like he could possibly even be the front runner for Rookie of the Year. You know, you put these two together, it's kind of concerning from a Lakers standpoint. So I totally understand.
Now, I'll put this out there, just not about Russell, but about rookies in general. They generally get overdrafted in fantasy leagues because everybody is excited about new things, and they'll look, okay, oh, Russell might be a top 80 player, so I'm going to pick him at pick 80. But that just limits your upside, because if he does live up to potential, you get value back. But if he doesn't, which is a big possibility, you're going to lose value. He's not going to be better than that. He's going to shoot the ball poorly. He's not going to have a great field goal percentage. He's going to turn the ball over a lot. So if you're looking at nine category leagues, you're going to have big turnover numbers. You're probably looking at, you know, close to 3.5 to 4 turnovers a game if he's getting 30 minutes. And that's quite a lot. That's going to really hurt you in that category. He's not going to score big amounts. You would hope that his three-pointers come back to not – well, he shot over 41% in Ohio State last season. He's not going to shoot that in the NBA. So that was part of his value. And the other thing that worries me a little bit about D'Angelo Russell is he sort of came out of nowhere last season. He wasn't talked about as a top pick. He had a great season, but coming out of high school, he wasn't thought of being an NBA lottery type talent. So did he have just a great situation in Ohio State that bumped up his value? Is that not who he is? It's very hard to tell, but I think that he's going to be overdrafted in leagues. His current average draft position sits at 94. I wouldn't be taking him inside the top 100. I think that's too high, especially if you're worried about those turnover numbers, because they are going to be quite an issue, and his field goal percentage is going to hurt as well. And again, like Clarkson, I think it's going to be hard for him to get 30 minutes a night. I don't really see how it happens, barring a significant injury to Kobe, which is probably more than likely at this point in his career. I think that's all of the rookies. If you had to pick one of those guys who you think is going to have the best NBA career out of Randall, Russell, and Clarkson, who do you think it is?
Oof, that's tough. I think Russell has the highest ceiling, but that's so tough. Clarkson is more athletic. I think you could argue that Clarkson long term could be better. Russell, his situation is going to dictate exactly how he develops. I don't think Byron Scott is the best coach for him. Byron Scott has never really been known as a guy who develops players. So I'm not sure how that dynamic is going to work. But, you know, all things equal, you know, you got to go with Russell, just because, you know, the guy did average 19 points at Ohio State. He has some tools that are really, really vital in the NBA. You know, you can't underestimate the shooting. He's going to have to develop other facets of his game. He can't be a one-dimensional player. As you touched on, you can't just go left. So, but I think in terms of ceiling, 19 years old, I think I'll go with Russell with that one.
I'm a little bit torn. I'd probably say it is Russell. I don't think he's going to ever be a great player, but the ceiling is there. But I am very high on Clarkson. I think he can be. He's a super athletic sort of guy. I think aggressiveness towards the rim in a sort of a Russell Westbrook mold. He's not the same guy as Westbrook. He's not the same athlete as Westbrook, but his game is not totally dissimilar to what Westbrook can do. And I think that he's going to have a pretty significant future. He's a real hard worker. We know that. I think that he's going to be a very good starter at some point in his career. Now, Kaveh, we're going to look at breakout guys. So I like to frame this by looking at guys who go from being good players to being great players, or a player who may have been on the scrap heap and turns it into being a decent role player, or just anything that you can define a breakout as. Who do you see as being that guy who's going to have that breakout type season for the Lakers?
I don't think anyone's going to have a breakout season next year. But like I touched on this a little bit before. I think down the line, whether with the Lakers or someone else, I think Frazier is going to have a place in the NBA. I think he's just a knockdown shooter. He's going to find his role, whether with the Lakers or someone else. Just with the Lakers, it's such a funny team to try to predict. I don't really know who's going to have a breakout season next year. If I had to pick, I would probably, I don't even know where to begin just because I'm not sure where the rotation is going to be. I'm not sure how the minutes are going to be distributed. I don't think the way the Lakers are right now is conducive to any player's strengths.
Yep.
So it's really, really hard to predict a breakout player. And from a fantasy standpoint, I think the Lakers might be one of the worst teams to invest in terms of any player, really. I don't think anyone's in the top 50 or 60. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I agree with that. I don't think anyone's in the top 50, really. Like, Kobe might sneak in certain situations, but there's a stack of risks, so you don't want to draft him inside the top 50. But nobody else is inside. There's barely anyone in, well, there's not anyone really inside the top 100. As an overall rule, there's no one. I think Hibbert is a guy that bounces back. We touched on him already. I think he has a bounce back, but that doesn't mean he's going to become a great fantasy player, but I think he's going to be better than what we saw the last couple of seasons as he gets some more minutes and hopefully he gets some more confidence and a bit more motivation and puts together a better season. But there's not a huge amount of guys here. In terms of a sleeper player, I like Lou Williams, who's currently being drafted at pick 131. I think that he has enough in his game to be a top 100 guy for head-to-head leagues. I don't suggest that we draft him inside the top 100, but if you pick him a couple of 10 or 12 spots before that 131 draft position, I think you're going to get some okay value, especially if you need some threes, and a bit of a free throw percentage boost because he's a good free throw shooter. He gets to the line a little bit. He can help in that area. So I think he's going to be a little bit of a steal towards the end of drafts as well. Is there anyone that you see being somewhat of a steal?
No, I guess it's all relative to where you take the player.
Yep.
I think most of the guys off the Lakers will be taken kind of towards the latter end of your draft. I do like Lou Williams. He was one of my favorite signings for the Lakers. I think he gives you instant scoring, gets you a couple steals. So, I mean, it's hard to go with anyone else but Lou Williams at this point. I'm just like looking up and down the roster. I don't see anyone really jumping out at me.
No, that's completely fair. Now, on the other side of things, I think there's a number of Lakers who are going to be overdrafted in terms of where their position is. I mentioned D'Angelo Russell's going inside the top 100. I don't like that. I don't like Julius Randle being picked at 117, which is his average draft position on Yahoo. That is ludicrous to me. I've got him outside the top 200. I can't see any situation where he gets 30-plus minutes, especially with Bass there. And even then, his game doesn't translate to fantasy. He gets points and rebounds. There's no steals. There's no blocks. There's no threes. There's poor percentages. There's no assists. He's a negative in numerous categories. And even when he scores, he's not going to be 20 and 10. He's not going to be Zach Randolph 20 and 10. He's going to be 12 and 6. And that's not good enough at 117. I don't want anything to do with that at all. Jordan Clarkson's got a surprisingly low draft position of 130. I think you'll see him getting drafted inside the top 100 in a lot of spots, and that probably is going to be a little bit too high. But at the moment, he's fine at 129. In fact, that's a little bit of a steal, but I don't really think that that remains at that point for him. Okay, so, Kaveh, we look at guys now. Who's the guy on this team where you look at the team and you go, if this guy had the best situation for him, if he got the full amount of minutes that he deserved, who would be the player that would thrive the most in that sort of ideal scenario?
I think it's Jordan Clarkson, definitely, especially this year. I don't think that he's going to get the minutes that he should deserve. This is a guy that should be getting 35-plus minutes. I think he's a guy that should just be given the keys, kind of like the second half of last year, and just let him go. I think he has all the tools to just take his game to the next level. I don't see any reason why he shouldn't continue improving, especially if you look at his athleticism and the tools that he has. He had a game against Oklahoma City, I think at OKC, where he had 30 points and he was going up against Westbrook, a guy that we both agree he has some similarities to. So I think if Jordan Clarkson was on a team where, like, think about Clarkson on a team like San Antonio, where Popovich is known to develop, players, and the player development department is, elite. I think Clarkson is a guy that can just has a limitless ceiling for his potential.
I agree with that completely. I think it is Clarkson. And if there is that situation where Bryant gets injured and he's in a place where he can get 35 minutes a night, there's going to be a ton of fantasy value from him. He's a guy that he's limited by his location and where he's playing, because if he was in that scenario where he was getting the big minutes, we're going to see big numbers, and it's top 50 potential. We saw that down the stretch. He was a top 50 sort of guy in the second half of last season. It is limited completely by, well, not completely, because his coach is limiting him as well. His coach, his teammates, his playing time, all that sort of stuff limits what Jordan Clarkson is able to do. Now, we've gone through 40 minutes here, Nakabe, and we've talked Lakers, and we've mentioned the name Kobe Bryant once or twice. Okay, he hasn't played a full season in 3 years. He's had numerous injuries, Achilles tear, fractured kneecap, shoulder tear. He's 37 years old. We keep hearing that this is going to be his last season. The odds of him staying healthy for a full season are very, very low. But he still showed that he can put up numbers last season. What are you expecting from Bryant? Are you thinking he's going to cut back his minutes? He played 35 minutes a night. We've heard the talk this offseason that he's going to be limited in his minutes, and him and Byron Scott are going to sit down and work it out. We also heard the same thing last year, and he played 35 minutes and then was out for the year after 35 games. Do you see a different Bryant in that sense, that he is going to take somewhat of a back step, or is he just going to be, I'm playing as much as I want?
No, I mean, you can't. I mean, you physically can't. Father Time catches up to you. I don't think he's going to be able to log down much minutes. And, I mean, even if he doesn't sustain major injuries, I think he's going to have enough just general soreness that's going to keep him out of quite a number of games. I don't see him playing more than 60 games, honestly. Maybe a little bit more than that. I'm not sure. But I would definitely, if I'm drafting Kobe, I'm going to take the bite on the field goal percentage, because I don't think we're ever going to see him shooting higher than 45%, maybe.
That's finished.
So, no, I don't. I expect him to maybe get 27, 8 minutes, something around there, and definitely miss a handful of games, just, you know, even if he doesn't sustain major injuries.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think I'm glad that you said that, because I've got him currently sitting at 30 minutes. I thought, well, maybe that's a little bit low, but I can't see him really getting anything above that. I don't think he's going to be a 20-point scorer. But last season, we go back to what he was able to do. Look, I know he played limited minutes, but he still scored 22 points a game. He had 1.5 threes and 1.5 steals, almost 6 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Like, they're great fantasy numbers. He also destroyed your field goal percentage at 37% on 20 attempts. He probably won't shoot 37% again, we'd hope. I think that, but you're right, it's not going to be 45%. We're going to be talking low 40s, and he's going to be on big attempt numbers, and that's going to hurt your field goal percentage. So you're going to have to be ready to just punt field goal percentage most of the time if you're dealing with Kobe. But in a situation where you can get him late, I think that on a per game basis, he's going to be able to return close to top 50 value just on those. You know, he could go 18, 5, and 5 with 1.5 threes and 1.5 steals again, and that's really valuable. You just need to know that the field goal percentage is going to hurt, and he's going to be in and out of your lineup. So in a situation where you've got, say, capped games played, so during the week you've got a certain amount of games that you can play, Bryant becomes extra valuable, because in that situation where if you're playing fantasy and during the week you have got, say, 37 games that you're allowed to play, then if you know he's going to be injured, you don't have to play him every one of those games. But if it's a situation where you just need to maximize games played every week, he's going to take time off, he's going to hurt you in that sense, and that drops him down a bit. But when you've got games capped and you're forced to sit guys out anyway, picking him at wherever his draft position is, which is at 60, well, that's probably still a bit high. I'd be happier looking at him at 70 or 80, even though his numbers project inside the top 50. If he slides down to 70 or 80, he becomes a pretty decent choice, because he's still going to be the alpha guy. He's still going to hold the ball a lot, and he is still going to rack up these stats. It's just going to be in limited minutes and limited games, but he could end up being somewhat of a value pick as you said before, it all depends on where you end up getting him in the draft.
Also, let's not forget that there's reports out there that Byron Scott is going to play him position 1 through 4. If he's getting time at power forward, how is that going to affect his numbers? Is his field goal percentage going to go up? Is it going to go down? If he's operating in the post, you would think maybe his field goal percentage would go up a little bit. I'm not sure how that's going to work. It depends how many minutes he gets at the four.
And the other thing that it depends on as well is how the other Lakers play. Like, if Russell actually finds his stroke from outside and can hit some threes, if Clarkson's being aggressive and driving, then Kobe's not going to demand triple teams as much. And especially if he's showing a willingness to pass. And as much as Kobe can be a chucker and a ball hog, he averages a lot of assists. He does pass the ball off. He averaged over five and a half assists a game is fantastic. It's better than some point guards. I think Damian Lillard only averaged 6 assists a game last season as a point guard. So Bryant does distribute the ball, but he's more like he just gets pissed off if his teammates aren't good. And he'll be like, you know what? You guys aren't getting it done. I'm holding onto the ball. But if Russell starts getting it done, if Clarkson starts, you know, showing what he can do, then Bryant's going to be more willing to pass. He's going to be able to establish himself down low more. He won't have as many double teams or triple teams. He'll be able to increase his rebounding numbers. His assist numbers might go up. He could be a really interesting guy that drops his points, but it's not completely outrageous to think that Kobe Bryant has a seven rebound season and another 5.5 assists because of the positioning that he's going to play and the other guys on his team. I think that there is definitely a chance for him to really transition his game to a different style of game and not be that, you know, he can't take guys, you know, one-on-one off the dribble anymore. He's going to have to change. And I think that it's going to be interesting watching Kobe. I'll put that much. I think that he can transition, but it's going to depend a lot on early season form of his other teammates, of Williams, of Clarkson, of Russell. What about Nick Young? What are your thoughts on him? Nick Young has declared he wants to play for the Australian Olympic team, which would be hilarious in itself. But what do you think of Young?
I think there's a conflict there with Lou Williams. Their games are so similar. Like when the first thing that came to my mind when the Lakers signed Lou Williams is, oh, okay, I like Lou Williams for this team. But then the second thing that came to my mind was, wow, he's so similar to Nick Young. Yep. How is that going to work? Who's going to be the first guy off the bench? Is it going to be Nick Young? Is it going to be Lou Williams? I remember the Lakers wanted Nick Young to be, you know, the sixth man of the year. Well, you just got the sixth man of the year in Lou Williams. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. I think that Nick is so similar to Lou in the fact that he's instant offense. I think he's a terrible decision maker. And I think he's a terrible, decision maker, not only with his passes, but just like his shooting. His shooting is very streaky. He has games where he's either on fire or he's really cold and the offense goes dead. So I see him getting maybe, you know, somewhere in the low 20-minute range.
I think that's probably about right. I can't see him getting more. And you mentioned, you know, the issue with him and Lou Williams there, but Byron Scott hates Nick Young. There's a definite conflict between those two. He does not like him at all. And if he's going to find a way to not give anyone minutes, it's going to be Nick Young. And if Anthony Brown shows that he can play, I wouldn't be shocked to see Young phased out of the rotation and just, you know what, he's just not playing because Scott doesn't tolerate bullshit, which is the one thing I like about him. And Young could be out of there. Like they could be looking to trade him. They could just put him completely onto the bench and not play him at all if these other guys come through. So there's not a lot to like about Nick Young for the season. He's being drafted at pick 130 in leagues, which is ridiculous. That's one spot behind Jordan Clarkson, which I find ludicrous. It's one spot ahead of Lou Williams, again, which is just insanity. He should not be picked anywhere inside the top 150. The minutes aren't going to be there, and he's just not that good a player. I don't understand. We love the narrative of Nick Young and the humor and all that sort of stuff and the tomfoolery, but when it comes to play on the court, he's not going to get minutes, and he's not going to be good. So please don't pick him at pick 130. That's just not going to work out for anybody.
Don't pick him at all.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's nothing but downside for him, really. One other guy we haven't talked about is Ryan Kelly, who excelled under Mike D'Antoni in his first season as a rookie, especially down the stretch. His game didn't really mesh well with Byron Scott, and he barely played at the start of the season. But down the stretch, he was playing huge minutes. He was getting 30 minutes a night for big stretches in the last part of the season. But that was in Byron Scott's purge of the roster when everyone was just, we're not playing you. We're not playing you, Hill. We're not playing you, Boozer. Ed Davis, you can sit. We're going to run Sacre and Black and Ryan Kelly big minutes. How does Kelly fit in as a guy who's heading into his third season? He's going to be playing for a new contract. How do you see him here? He's an odd one to me.
Yeah. I'm not sure, which tells you exactly the problem with the Lakers. They have no identity. You don't know what to expect with them. And Kelly is just in that group of players with question marks on the Lakers. The Lakers have a lot of mediocre players, not terrible by any means, but just not reliable upper echelon type players And Kelly has some things that will benefit like some teams or even the Lakers. He has size and he could make threes, which is important because you were talking about, you know, if Kobe goes in the, you know, in the low post, it's going to be important for guys like Kelly to come in and hit those threes to open up the floor. So that's the role that I see for Ryan Kelly. Unfortunately, he hasn't really caught on. He was injured a little bit. I believe it was last year or the year before. So hopefully, you know, he'll catch on and find his niche and make some threes and open up the floor.
Do you see him as a four or a three?
I see him as a four only because of his length. But then at the same time, he's not really a great rebounder.
Yep.
So he kind of fluctuates between the three and the four. I could see him playing the three. But he's such a bad defender. It's like, what do you really do with him?
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what to do with him. His size would tell you he should be a four, but then he doesn't play defense, so then kind of got to move him to the three.
Especially with the other guys at the four, Brandon Bass and Julius Randle, they don't play defense either. That's the problem with this team. No one plays defense. There's no perimeter defender at all. Kobe's probably the best perimeter defender, and that's, you know, that's saying something. There's literally Hibbert. Like Tariq Black's an okay rebounder. Robert Sacre he's good at waving towels, but there's nobody else that's can defend apart from Hibbert on this team, and it's going to get ugly very quickly. And that could also be a problem. Is that if it starts to get ugly defensively, we're going to have to see Russell start forcing things, and that's not going to work out well. Kobe might start to go into hero mode, Kobe, and he's going to start chucking. Clarkson might do it. Lou Williams and Nick Young will definitely start doing it. It could get ugly as they try and keep up with other teams that are just basically strolling in and hitting open shots all over the place. And Byron Scott's not a guy that's going to instill confidence in them. He's not going to provide a great team system, a great team defensive personality. Let's be honest, Byron Scott shouldn't be coaching in the NBA. They should have gotten rid of him in the offseason. If they don't get rid of him next offseason, they're joking. I know he was a Laker player and he had good seasons there, but it doesn't mean you're a good coach. And he's proven that he's not a good coach and makes some baffling decisions. We hear some of the rubbish that comes out of his mouth regarding his theories on basketball and three-pointers and pick and rolls and all this sort of stuff. He basically just wants to play it like it's 1974, and it's not going to cut it. This team is going to be a mess, I think, as long as he's got the helm. They need someone who actually understands the modern NBA, and unfortunately, that's not him.
I totally agree. I think they had an opportunity here to get someone like Tom Thibodeau, which it kind of blows my mind why you wouldn't make that decision. It's kind of a no-brainer for me. But, I mean, when you look at the Lakers, either like this immediate future, they're either going to be a pleasant surprise next year or it's just going to completely self-combust. There is no middle ground here with this team.
Yeah, they could be better at stretches, but it's not going to last. I don't think they're going to be bad. Now, are they going to be bad enough to keep their top three pick? That's probably going to be tough because Philadelphia is going to be in that mix as well. But in thinking that, a lot of teams got, I felt like nearly every team got better in the NBA this season. Not many teams got worse. Denver got worse.
Portland
got worse, but they're not worse. They're not going to be that bad to get a top three pick. I don't think Portland, they're not going to drop that far down. Sacramento was terrible, but they got better for this season, killed themselves for the long-term future, but they got better this season. Orlando is going to improve. The Knicks definitely got better. They might still be a sneaky chance to have a top three pick, the Lakers, given how everyone else got better, and they sort of did, but we don't really know how it's going to pan out for them. So that might be a positive for them that they don't have to give up that lottery pick to the Sixers next season. We'll see how it all works out.
Right.
Kabe, who's your favorite player on this team?
My favorite player on the current team, Kobe's still on the team, but yeah. I like the old Kobe. I'm kind of part of the group that grew up on Kobe from like the Shaq and Kobe days. But on the current team, I think most people will agree Clarkson is a really exciting player to watch. So that would easily be my favorite player right now. And I think in the right situation, he's going to be even better and continue to improve. So that's the guy I pretty much have my eye on.
Yeah, he's my guy as well. Now, he had, if you look at his overall rookie numbers, they're a little bit underwhelming because he inexplicably was playing in the D League for chunks of the season when they had no point guard. We said when Ronnie Price was out there running things, Jordan Clarkson was wasting away on the bench and in Bakersfield. he ended up getting 12 points a game, you know, 3.5 assists, 3 rebounds, almost a steal, and half a three. But that's not telling the whole story. We look at what he did in the last month of the season. He averaged 37 minutes a game, almost 20 points, 6.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds, 1.5 threes, 2 steals. He shot at 45 and 83 from the line. They're fantastic numbers. They're top 20 sort of fantasy numbers because, you know, he was getting big minutes. He was doing it all. And that's why if Kobe goes down, someone else goes down that backcourt, then you want to be all over Clarkson because he's going to put up great numbers. And that's why we're so excited about him. And that's also why I don't like some of the moves that may be in that backcourt, because I would have loved for them to just go, Clarkson is our point guard moving forward, pick up Okafor. I think it would have helped a ton rather than the move they made with Russell. You heard that the whispers were coming out before the pick, but I still thought, nah, they're taking Okafor. They have to take Okafor. Didn't work that way, which we'll see. We'll see if it's the right decision at some point over their careers over the next 5 to 10 years. But at this point, I don't like the move.
Clarkson. Do you think they took Russell because they thought that he was the better player? But, I mean, Okafor is definitely more ready. I think they thought that Russell has a higher ceiling long-term than did Okafor. Whereas Okafor may put out, you know, immediately, but Russell projecting down the line could be a better player. Possibly.
I think that they also had in their mind that we're taking Russell because we're getting Boogie Cousins. I think that they think that they're doing that trade and that we're going to package Russell as part of that and that he would be their big man. I think that was somewhat of their thinking that obviously fell through.
Possibly they were pretty confident that they would land Marcus Aldridge in free agency. Then that would explain taking Russell as well. Yes. But see, the problem with that is you need to really just take the guy that you think is the best overall, regardless of any outside, you know, commitments, or if you think you're going to get Aldridge or not, it doesn't matter. You should really just go for the sure thing that you feel, you know, is there right there for the taking of the draft.
That's overly confident on their behalf, considering they haven't been able to attract a good free agent since
Dwight Howard.
Well, they couldn't even retain him. That was a trade. They couldn't retain him as a free agent. The last free agent they got was, I don't know, Shaq?
And that's going back.
We're talking, look, that's 99, I think it was. We're talking 16 years ago. Ron Artest, if you count him as a big free agent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's just, it's over. Valuing your appeal when nobody has wanted to go to the Lakers, and that might change in time, but it's been a long time since they've been able to attract a guy. Pau Gasol was traded there. Dwight Howard was traded there. These guys didn't choose to go there. Yeah, look, Pau, you know, re-upped there. Howard didn't, which is again showing that this team has lost some of its cachet. But
in fairness, though, Dwight Howard, I remember that summer that he had, remember there were reports that he had a list of teams that he would go to?
Yes.
And supposedly the Lakers were one of the teams that he wanted to go to. So yeah, I mean, it wasn't a free agent signing, but he did kind of orchestrate his way to LA, not very blatantly, but he did have a list. I think Dallas was on the list as well. But you're right, just a straight up free agent signing. I can't remember anyone of significance.
It's been an exceedingly long time. I think I heard someone that mentioned, we talk about back to Russell. I think it was Nate Duncan on his podcast talks about with the draft, when you're looking at drafting guys, you pick the best guy. You don't care about best fit, because when these guys become good in 3 or 4 seasons, your roster is going to be 75% different anyway. You don't keep the same roster for 5 or 6 years. So you pick someone now because they fit, say, example, Okafor in Philly, when people were smashing Philadelphia because, look, they've already got Noel, they've already got Embiid. But you pick the best guy because when these guys hit their prime, you have no idea what's going to happen. You know, Embiid's injured again. Obviously, that factored into their decision. But you don't know who's going to be around, especially when you get, you know, past pick 5 or something. You just pick whoever is the best guy. And if it works out, you fit around it. You don't, I'm not picking this guy because there's someone else in his spot, because the team's changed so much. Guys go up and down. Like, players' peaks in the NBA in general, they peak for like 3 or 4 years and that's it. And then they start dropping off and someone takes their spot and they move around. There's so much movement of players and fluctuation in form that you can't rely on that to be, this is going to be my team in 2018, because it's going to be so, so different. And there's a lot that changes.
I've said this for a while, and I've actually always felt this way, is I think one of the worst things that you could do is draft based off of me.
Yep.
Because that's how you get yourself in trouble. I think if you take the best player that's available, then you can plug holes a lot of different ways. Then you could go to free agency. You could go to different ways to plug around the best player that's available instead of saying, oh, hey, Kevin Durant's on the board, but we need a big guy. Let's take, you know, Greg Oden. And maybe they felt that Greg Oden was the better player at that time. But if you're picking him because, and I'm only using this as an example, but if you're taking him because you need a big guy, then you just passed on a franchise player because of that. So you could fill needs on other avenues. The draft is not really a place that you want to draft based off of need. Maybe towards the later first round or the second round, then you could kind of change your strategy. But I think early on, especially in the lottery, you really can't draft based off of need.
You just have to take I think just the whole draft, you just take the best player. You never know how they're going to fit or anything like that. You just take the best guy, and there's always a market for trading and for moving guys and for changing, either trading that guy or trading other guys on your team. I think you just take the best guy in general, and I'm not convinced that Russell was the best guy at that spot. Maybe they thought he had the highest ceiling, but that's enough talk on Russell. Let's get to the last question, Kaveh, and that is, who's your favorite all-time player for this team?
It's really easy to go with guys like Kobe or Magic, and pretty much like everyone else, I love watching Kobe. I was too young for Magic. But it's really funny. I really like guys like Nick Van Exel and Eddie Jones. That team I felt like was really, really exciting. It's when I first really caught on to the Lakers. Growing up in Los Angeles, I can tell you it's always been a Kobe town. But before Kobe got here, even as a kid that I was watching, I loved the Van Exel, Eddie Jones combination. I felt like that team was really exciting. I would say Nick Van Exel as a kid was one of my favorite players. I even had like his jersey, and just love watching him play.
Yeah, I had Van Exel down actually on my list here of favorite guys. He was a really exciting guy to watch. He was a decent scorer, a good distributor. He had a couple of seasons where he got close to 9 assists a game. One of those is in Denver, but he had a few in LA as well. He gets some steals. He was a great 3-point shooter. He was hitting, high 30s in percentages, 38, 39, hitting 2 threes a game, decent scoring, good free throw shooter. He was a fantastic player to watch, out there. There was just something about him as well that I was a huge fan. I don't know exactly what it was, but he was just something that I could get behind, but you really sort of could be not attracted to him as a player. You look at him and go, this is a guy, he has this sort of it factor where he draws people in and you really enjoy what he's able to do on the court. But you mentioned Magic Johnson, and he was just super fun, and he was an awesome player. We know the stories of him, playing center in his rookie season in the finals and the numbers there as a point guard. His numbers were crazy. Now, he basically didn't hit any threes, but that wasn't the era. He didn't shoot them well, but he's a guy that, look, we have a season here. He almost had the Oscar Robertson average of a triple-double in his third season. He was 18.5 points, 9.6 rebounds, 9.5 assists, and 2.7 steals. Crazy, crazy numbers. He shot over 50% from the field in his first 8 seasons, and that's as a point guard again, which is just ludicrous. 80% from the free throw line, and we're talking 2.5 steals a game, 10 assists a game. He only averaged 20 points a game 4 times in his career, but he was just fun. He was just awesome to watch. And you can sit down and watch Magic Johnson, YouTube highlight mixtapes, and you can sit and watch him for hours and just marvel at what he was able to do at his height. It helps with his teammates, obviously, but he was amazing to watch. And I watched a little bit of him growing up, didn't see him at peak Magic Johnson in the early 80s, but he was still fantastic. And, it's a shame that his career was cut short by that illness. He's also one of the oddest guys to follow on Twitter, because some of his takes are a little bit hot, and they're not all that accurate, but he definitely loves stirring up controversy on there as well. So make sure you're checking out what Magic Johnson is doing on Twitter. But he was a fantastic player.
When is the next time we're going to see a rookie start at center and put up 42, 15, and 7?
I'm going to say never. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
He averaged as a rookie 18, 7.5, and 7.5 with 2.5 steals as a rookie point guard. and played center. He was great. He was just so good. It's never going to happen again.
It's hard to underestimate someone like Magic, but I think one of the areas that we really don't talk about as much is his court smarts. His decision making was just like, you know, second to none. He saw stuff that other people didn't see.
Yeah, like you talk about like the passing ability of John Stockton or Steve Nash, which is awesome, but Magic was like that as well. He was, if not better than some of those guys with passes. And we're talking about, you know, cross-court passes, you know, floor-length passes through guys' legs, you know, skip passes that go from one key to the other all the way down the court. You know, he'd be laying on his back, he'd throw it over his head through someone's legs. They were just insane. We know the Magic Johnson no-look pass is something that, you know, is basically folklore of him, you know, driving down the lane, holding the ball up, you know, throwing it both sides, then round his back. And you saw the other team just looking around going, what is going on, as they were watching him doing it and have absolutely no idea. And then obviously surrounded by other players like Kareem and James Worthy, when he was able to do that, like there's all confusion, just leaves those guys open. And no wonder that team was so strong. But he was, yeah, he's...
The chemistry that he had with his teammates was at a level where he would like anticipate where you were going to be before you actually got there. The pass would be waiting for you.
Yeah, exactly. He would put it because he knew where people would run, and he could make people that weren't necessarily great, he could make them look good as well. And that is such a key point to being a great point guard. If you can make guys who aren't good look good by throwing them open and getting them into the right spot and basically directing them by the way that you pass the ball, it's such a key thing. And not, there's pretty much nobody in the NBA that's at that level. Now the guy that may have been at that level a couple of years ago was Rajon Rondo. Chris Paul, you might put close to that, but there's really nobody who compares in terms of what Magic Johnson was able to do.
I totally agree.
I think we're pretty much done for the Lakers here. Kaveh, have you got anything you want to add on them?
On the Lakers, I mean, it's just a confusing situation. Very, very, very perplexing. I don't think Byron Scott is the right coach. I don't think until Kobe retires and Byron Scott really is removed from, you know, being the coach of this team, we're not really going to see a new chapter of Laker basketball. I think until that point, they're going to be stuck in this gray area, and just kind of spinning their wheels. I think that's what the immediate future is looking like for the Lakers, which is kind of sad because, you know, being in Los Angeles, I could tell you that it's still a Laker town, even with the Clippers being, you know, much, much better and being the contender. People are still talking about the Lakers more than the Clippers. So it's like the fan base is still there. But the Lakers management and all the way down, that is where the question marks begin. So
definitely there's a lot of issues with Jim Buss, with Byron Scott, the front office. You feel like they're their own worst enemy at a lot of the time, but they're building a foundation. I think that's fair to say. I think Russell and Clarkson can be a really good foundation. They've got to add to it in the next year. They've got to hope that they can hold on to this draft pick and pick someone high. If they win 30 games, fantastic, but it also ruins their future to a degree. They need to be bad. They need to be terrible, and they need to get this draft pick and then pair another top three pick with Clarkson, with Russell. Maybe Randall proves me wrong. And then they start to build. But if they miss out on this one, it's going to be a struggle for a few more years, I think.
I think they improved, which means they'll win more games. They'll be a little bit better, but they're going to probably lose their draft pick. So down the line, they're not going to get better. Yeah. Like I said, they're stuck between a rock and like a hard place. They just need to get past this stage. And I think they've made some wrong decisions, on their draft picks. I think the Steve Nash trade is still biting them in the butt.
Yeah, I understand why they did it, and you can't really fault them for it because they thought, you know, Powell, Kobe, Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, this is great, and look at all these guys, but they were old. Howard didn't know this. Howard was starting his decline. Kobe was old. Nash never played. Gasol wasn't invested in it. I understand why they made the move, but it is hurting them, significantly now, and it probably will for the next 4 or 5 years until they really can start to turn it around. Kaveh, where can everyone find you on Twitter again?
You can find me at Kaveh's Room.
And you can they can find your writing on Hardwood Paroxysm and on Hoops Habit. Anywhere else that you're writing at the moment?
Yes, Harvard Paroxysm, Hoops Habit. I'm also writing for Daily Knicks, which is another website, fan-sided. I'm also covering the UConn men's basketball team for SB Nation, which will be exciting this year, coming up pretty soon here on the college basketball season.
I know nothing about college basketball. I need to really start watching it this year. I start looking at it in about April. I watch a little bit of March Madness, but not much. I need to start watching more of it.
You don't know what you're missing out.
The thing is, over here, we don't get, like, I can watch NBA games, I can get League Pass and watch all the games, but we don't get that much college basketball. It's not as easy to find. We don't have games all over TV or anything. We get some, but we get a lot of, like, get a little West Coast Conference basketball because of all the Australians that go to St. Mary's. So we get a lot of St. Mary's basketball and that sort of stuff. We get a little bit of SEC stuff. We get a little bit of Big Ten, but we get a lot of, St. Mary's and Gonzaga and that sort of stuff. We don't get a huge amount in general. And even then, it's not necessarily all the good prospects, but hopefully we're going to get a fair bit amount of Kentucky basketball this year. We're going to see more, SEC this year as well, because, Ben Simmons is playing for LSU. So we'll see a bit more of him as well this year.
At the minimum, watch the conference tournaments and March Madness.
Yeah. March Madness, I watch a bit of that, but by the time I'm trying to catch up on what's happening, I'm sort of behind the eight ball. I need to get myself a good preview magazine, read up on these guys, watch the games as they happen, and really be up to date on it. Kaveh, it's been great having you on. Some great insights on the Lakers. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me. No problem at all. Make sure you go and follow Kaveh on Twitter at Kaveh's Room. Follow me also at redrock_bball. Make sure you're checking out Hardwood Paroxysm and their new podcast center, which you can find on the website hardwoodparoxysm.com, and check out all the other great podcasts that are there. Don't forget to subscribe to this one and all the other podcasts across there. Leave reviews on iTunes. That is always super helpful for helping get the podcast out to more people. And make sure you're checking out Basketball Monster. The memberships will be opening in the next day for Basketball Monster. Go ahead and check that out. Access all their draft tools and rankings and projections. And my articles are going up on there, and the Monster boards and all that sort of stuff. And some great content over on Basketball Monster. That does it for today, Kaveh. Thanks once again.
Thank you.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.